At the Races with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Friday. Race fans, Sirius 219 XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at the website as well, stevebick.com. Weekend preview at the races, brought to you by Twin Spires. And we'll have actually a trio of Twin Spires / Brisnet visitors, because Scully's going to join us in this hour, as is Vance Hansen. Do a little Dubai with Vance. And in the morning, by the way, as early as possible, we'll get the long shot lad as well. Kev Humphreys, I know, is going to lay out his Dubai World Cup tabs. All right. So watch for that on Twitter. Later we'll get Ed back. And after doing Turfway yesterday, in fact, you just listened, if you're listening to the replay, and we'll go Gulfstream with Ed. Lots more, of course, including Jay Privman and Mike Welch, Daily Racing Form. Jay with the Derby Watch advances for the 3-point scoring races, and the Florida Derby, the UAE Derby, and the Jeff Ruby at Turfway. So we'll get Jay's thoughts. We'll check in with Hammer at Oaklawn. It's a quiet weekend again at Oaklawn, some nice racing, but not a headline weekend. Still plenty to come there, though, of course, but the no double, the feature, but we'll see what else. Hammer, last week he was having such phone trouble. I know there was there were a handful of things that Rick wanted to get to, and Nick, of course, Nick Tamaro, top of hour three. I haven't mentioned the card at Aqueduct on Saturday is that fun starter stakes series, that they've been doing the last few years. And, of course, two of the races will be involved. The 9th and the 10th will be involved in the cross country. So we'll go over that with Nick, and the cross country involving the Turfway, the final three stakes at Turfway, the 9th, 10th, 11th, the Ruby, the Bourbonette, and the Kentucky Cup. As well as that 9th and 10th from New York, which are tough. A mile and 3/8, the Stud Muffin, and for those that remember Stud Muffin, and the Dad's Caps are the two starter stakes. Fields at 12, 7/8 on the Dad's Caps. Tough, very tough races. And then you fold in the Turfway races that can be mysterious because of the surface, and you got yourself maybe a very challenging. The last two weekends, in fact, have been, you've had monstrous payouts. The went 108,000, the one winner 2 weeks ago, and then last week 15,000 and change on the tough combo with the Oaklawn races. So it's going to be challenging again this week, the cross country. There's NYRA news, actually, that I'm going to slip in. Won't spend much time on the news front this morning, because there's just too much handicapping to do and too many good, hopefully, good opportunities. But there is news. We'll also, after Nick, we'll get Papo in. We'll do some form to win handicapping with Papo. Hope you had a chance to join Papo. I was out and about yesterday in the middle part of the afternoon, and couldn't sit in for the Twitch and / YouTube seminar. But every Thursday, 4 o'clock, Papo bringing you the bells and whistles and helping you utilize form to win. We'll talk about a couple of winners in a moment. First, the sad news and some of the off the racetrack news. And we obviously today, given weekend preview setting, aren't going to be able to eulogize properly Larry Melanson. And very, very sad. And a huge outpouring of horsemen, fans, racing contemporaries, riding contemporaries, jocks that rode with Larry, that he mentored, and he was a friend to everybody. And of course, these last, what, four years, maybe 5 years, after suffering the stroke, it just feels like, you know, he had his retirement pretty much robbed from him. Had a terrific career, won almost 3,000 races and all kinds of horses, short, long, turf, main track, you know, probably, you know, it will do this next week with a bunch of people. I will have to, it'll be hard to stop the appreciations from coming for Larry Melanson. The guided tour, probably the one that came to mind earliest, but you look at the list of stake horses that he piloted and he rode for everybody. His, you know, almost four decade long streak of riding at Churchill, one of the winningest riders in Downs history, but popular just everywhere he went. You know, Mid-American racing, Chicago, you know, down to Louisiana, and of course, Louisiana native. Very, very sad news, and we'll have all the details. There hasn't been arrangements announced yet, and there'll be, you know, there'll be tributes and so forth. But thoughts to Denise, his wife, and his three children, really, Heather and Lance, and his stepson, Keelan. So I'm sure Al Stahl will join us next week, and we'll reach out for Niall O'Callaghan, and he wrote for Elliot Walden. Larry Melanson was, you know, just one of those, you know, kind of always reliable journeyman that, you know, if you were a set of connections, you rode him with confidence, and if you bet him, you bet him with confidence. Really sad. So I wanted to get that. I mentioned the, and we'll do it properly, probably Tuesday, if I had to guess. Remind everybody that the future wager picks up today through Sunday, 6 o'clock, and I'm sure that we will have we'll get some thoughts. Maybe I know James certainly would, and Ed, we'll see what they think. We'll probably check see what Nick thinks, if he's got any interest. And of course, you know, already told you Big Lake, who was going to be a part of it. Mary Rampolini getting the news that Big Lake is sidelined, so he will not be part of the wagering. You can cross him out, but in looking at the paper, at the PPs, and Thoroughgraph has got, you know, the package available to look at the Thoroughgraph figures. And as Andy Serling said on Tuesday, with Life is Good sideline, there is a wide swath of horse derby prospect that are not separated by much at all. And of course, you know, we've got tomorrow, we've got next weekend, and we've got Arkansas. But boy, Sunday 5:30, I think you're going to want to take a look at this and see if there's somebody that is out of whack, because there's not a lot separating, you know, these horses. And there's probably a few you already have potentially a, you know, not a mental block against, but, you know, there's some that you're probably, shrugging off. And of course, what's most notable about this list is the ones that you're not going to see. I mean, obviously collaborates running and greatest honor, et cetera. You know, the ones that are, you know, the one Spielberg, the ones that are on the track this weekend. But the ones that you're not going to see for, you know, the next 2 weeks, they could be value. So, and then of course, the horses that came out of Louisiana that are going to participate and, you know, are going to be, you know, the as we said, the proxies of the world and even Mandaloon, I suppose. You know, there's usually this last pool is, you know, is kind of a foregone conclusion, but it doesn't feel like that given what's going on. So keep that in mind. I mentioned the Naira piece next week. In fact, I had talked yesterday with Pat McKenna more about the opportunity to, you know, advise everybody about the potential to come to Belmont. I mean, certainly we know and expect that Saratoga will have, you know, a more liberal opportunity for attendance. But then came this story yesterday afternoon. That if you didn't see it, Naira and Fox have made a 9-year business partnership that expands on what they've already established. And it even includes Fox taking a stake in Naira Bets. This is a pretty important development, frankly. And the guarantee of broadcast time and coverage, you know, other than what is already contracted, you know, on the national basis of things like the Triple Crown, but and Belmont Stakes, but everything else pretty much is going to be covered through the end of the decade and beyond. I mean, it's pretty crazy. So we'll get more details. Probably get Mike Mulvihill and Tony Olivato in here to discuss. And congratulations to everybody involved. It's good news for not just for, you know, for Naira. It's good news for the game. Period. The exposure benefits everybody. And speaking of potential good news for the game, I'm going to sneak this in and reach for Scully, actually, and get started, Case. Let's get James in here and get going because we've got plenty to do. I got the nicest – I got a couple of fun emails to slip in here. I should go – let me quickly find it. I got a note the other day. Georgia Antley Hunt wrote me, and she's in Wyoming, and apparently the Wyoming legislature is getting close potentially to allowing parimutuel wagering. And so we're going to get more details, and if you're listening from out, you know, out that way, you know, any of the jurisdictions right now, including Georgia, where there again is another, you know, there's another foray at work involving parimutuel and sports betting. You know, obviously population wise, Georgia is extensive, but, you know, any little bit on this front, getting, you know, the jurisdictions that don't, aren't currently legal for parimutuel wagering, getting them approved and up and running is a positive. So I'm going to get you details on that and appreciate Georgia alerting us. And I've got to slip in, too. I got the nicest note and a funny note. Mike Slobum from St. Louis and his son, Dustin, that own Resurrection Road, who you've seen run the last couple of years, now a five-year-old mare, Eric Reed trades. And Mike got the biggest kick yesterday out of the whole the resurrection humor of the resurrection stylings of Ed DeRosa. So Mike wrote me a terrific message on Facebook that made me laugh, and the whole story of how he and his son, they're just run of the mill, they're just everyday people, fans and players, and they got involved in the game, and then they ended up with a mare that kind of washed out as a racehorse, and they bred her to Bellamy Road, and now they've got this Resurrection Road, and undoubtedly when she retires they'll probably breed her, but they had a nice write-up about them in the Post-Dispatch, so I wanted to. And I've been a fan of Eric Reed's for a long time. On my first Derby, got to meet his parents, Herbie Reed, of course, and Kay, and they have that the B&B, Rabbit Run off behind Keeneland, and I've always rooted for Eric, and it's funny because I had seen the name, they'd seen Resurrection Road as a racehorse and has done well, and is just getting geared up for the start of her 5 year. Just worked the other day at Mercury, so I got a big kick out of Mike's note. Let's get started on this weekend preview, and James Scully swings in. James has got an appointment to get out to, so I figured we'd tee it up with James to get going. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Yes, for big weekend, three major qualifiers at hand, and looking forward to the racing this weekend, and Keeneland getting started next week.
Well, and for those that typically in this spot find Marty McGee, Marty, it was on his way back from Florida and got stuck, I think, that heavy weather between Florida and Kentucky, and ended up having to drop anchor in Knoxville. So no Marty today, but we'll get Marty, we'll get him in for the start of Keeneland next week. And James, before we talk about the three preps and anything else you like, quick review of last week, Hot Rod Charlie, and what you thought the Louisiana Derby results portend.
Well, I was impressed by Hot Rod Charlie's performance. Now, he won't be able to get that trip in the Derby where he's, like, setting the pace and leading wire to wire. But I just really like the fact that he showed improved speed like that. I think that bodes well for his chances to get a good trip in the Derby. Really improved tactical speed, in a sense, from him. And I'll tell you, I even thought the runner-up, Midnight Bourbon, you know, he comes up a little bit short in the end. But I really, you know, just from watching the replays of that race, I mean, it just, like, he's, like, full of horse turning for home. I think that horse is getting, like, better and better for Astro. I mean, like, you know, basically in the LeCompte, he won that race wire-to-wire. In the Risen Star, he finishes a weakening third. And I just came away impressed by the top two. Obviously, you know, I'm not positive Hot Rod Charlie or Midnight Bourbon might be good enough to win the Kentucky Derby. But I think both colts are, you know, the types that if I land on somebody else as my top choice, I'll be looking at both those horses as underneath candidates, because I think they both have something going for them out of the Louisiana Derby, Steve.
I appreciate it. And I've spent a lot of time, in fact, this week kind of rehashing what went on in that, you know, in the Louisiana Derby, and in part because of the mile and 3/16 and whatever else that can contribute toward, you know, toward understanding who these 3-year-olds are and what, you know, what the extra 110 yards is going to mean for them. And, you know, especially when a horse like Mandaloon misfires and, you know, could very well end up participating. And then having horses like Midnight Bourbon and Proxy and even Obisos, you know, who was kind of yeah. chunking along. I mean, he feels like a Steppenwolfer type, or a that's what I'm talking about type. That you know, when you're building that third and fourth rung of your triple and super, you got to think about because those kinds of horses get involved in the mutuals in the Derby. I mean, that's just a fact.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one thing about Obesos is he is a little bit of a confirmed late runner, but I definitely thought that he took a really positive step forward mm-hmm. off of that Risen Star, where he didn't get involved too much in the stretch, and then you know came back and ran a lot stronger in the Louisiana Derby. So he's an improving horse. Only has two stakes appearances. He's the type that, yeah, will definitely be worthy of some consideration underneath. I mean, the defection of Life is Good really does open the picture up a lot, it seems, and it'll be an exciting few weeks coming up. I'll mention one other thing with that Fairgrounds Oaks team. You know, once again, you get that race where Travel Column, you know, she beats Claire Air on this occasion, and they ran the mile on the 16th a lot faster than they did in the Rachel Alexandra. You know, Pace is making these races, and those are slow paces that they've been running in Louisiana. And, like, for example, a horse like Clairiere, she's coming into the Oaks with, like, Brissonette speed ratings of 86 and 90. And there's going to be other horses in the Oaks field that have run faster on paper, run bigger performance numbers than both Travel Column and Clairiere. And I'm just not buying it. I'm buying what my eyes are telling me. I think both those fillies have a huge class advantage over all the other three-year-old fillies. They might. I'd be surprised right now if they didn't run 1-2 in either order on April 30th.
Interesting. Well, and there's a few we do have Oaks preps yet to run, and we'll see if somebody else takes a step forward, because I don't disagree. It feels like a pretty murky lot, but we do know what they are. We are who we thought we were in this case. As we shift gears into this weekend, I've got the future wager that I brought up before you joined us, and I'm just looking down, and as you were talking, I was kind of crossing off or at least highlighting the ones who've already run, and or the ones that will have run by the time Sunday 6 o'clock rolls around. So that's Collaborate, Greatest Honor, Helium, Hot Rod Charlie, Mandaloon, Midnight Bourbon, Obesos, Proxy, and Spielberg. So 2, 5, 6, 7, 8, that's 9 of the 23, because there's only 23 because Big Lake is out of the picture. What's your take on this group? Because it does feel like there's going to be some potential overlays. There's going to be some names that their prices on Derby Day are going to be lower than what they're going to be on Sunday.
Well, I don't think that Mike Battaglia really had the opportunity to adjust with Life is Good coming out as far as some of these morning line odds. I mean, Medina Spirit at 20-1, I just think he's going to be bet way down. I think people are going to respect the heck out of him, and he's going to take a lot of action. A horse, but for me, in this final future wager pool, it's just all value. I mean, I'm looking to bet horses that I think could have a viable chance to win. They're going to be much more higher price this weekend than they will be on the first. And there's not a lot of candidates from that pool. The one horse that sort of does stick out to me just looking at it, and I've mentioned him before in future wager columns, so I didn't write about him this week, but Dream Shake is listed at 50-1 on the morning line. He broke his maiden real impressively. Got out finished in the stretch by Medina Spirit for second in that San Felipe, but that was still a solid third place effort. He's come back and worked a 5-furlong bullet for Peter Erden. To me, that horse is a huge candidate to take a big step forward in the Santa Anita Derby next weekend, and that's a horse I'll be shopping his odds, because if he runs first or second in the Santa Anita Derby, his odds are definitely going to be lower on Derby Day than I think they'll be this weekend.
Well, and I'm going to give you a three-headed monster. The 5, 11, and 20. The three Chad Brown horses are 30-1, 30-1, and 30-1. If you're going to get anything, I don't know, north of 20, let's say 20-1. On crowded trade, highly motivated, and risk-taking, I don't see how you don't how you don't get involved, because one or two or all three have potential here next week to take another step forward. And you know, Chad could land all three of them in the Derby. So I would be very, very cognizant of where the Chad entities, where they sit come 5:30 on Sunday.
Yeah, that's a fair point. All three of them have, you know, are eligible to run well. Risk Taken and Crowded Trade are both being the Wood Memorial and highly motivated going to the Bluegrass. And definitely highly motivated, had a troubled trip in his first race back. Crowded Trade had just broken his maiden, so I thought that was a heck of a good second there that day. And Risk Taken, you know, his progression is just really, it's caught my eye in those last two races at a mile and an eighth, and I expect him to run well in the Wood Memorial.
I appreciate it. We'll bring it up with Ed as well and probably with Nick and see if they've got any thoughts. And, James, let's dive into some analysis and some action.
Yeah, we'll just start right away with the Turfway Park. Got six stakes there, headlined by the Jeff Ruby Stakes. $250,000. Got a field of 12 in here, Steve. You know, I'll just start off mentioning, you know, you got the top four finishers from the Battaglia Memorial back. Hush of a Storm won that day, survived inquiry, one going away by two lengths. I think he's eligible. You know, once again, I think drawing post two is a favorable post position. It's going to be interesting to see how the pace in this race shakes out. But there is some speed on the outside. You have some horses like even in the middle. It'll be like Smiley Sabaka. I expect him to show more speed off of that Sam Davis. I think Moonlight Strike is a candidate to be on the engine for Joseph. And, you know, obviously you got some outside horses with Dynamite that I think is going to be forward and potentially Hockey Dad. So I think it's going to be a fair pace in that race. And Hush of a Storm, I do think, is eligible to get a good trip in there. I'll mention the runner-up from that, John Battaglia Memorial, strong right to his inside, like the King. I expect Drayden Van Dyke, who takes over for that colt, to show speed from the inside post. I don't necessarily think he's going to be setting the pace, but I expect him to get good positioning, like right behind the early leaders. The horse to beat to me, I'm going to give him a slight edge in the race, is Tarantino. I really like this juvenile turf form, Steve, winning two starts and running a no second in the Zuma Beach last, at age two. Came back for Brissette, made his first race on dirt. I really thought he ran a good race in the Holy Bull to be second that day, to be a clear second. Came back, he weakened. He was in position in the Fountain of Youth, weakened a little bit late. But, you know, he's a horse that's now making his third start off of a freshening here for Brissette. Has a good tactical foot, eligible to get a good trip. And I do expect him to run well. So I'm going to give him the slight edge with Fraud Giroux, Tarantino.
Tarantino's the 7-3-1 with Giroux and
no, I will mention up? That Moonlight Strike is yep. My long shot play. It'll yep. be interesting. I'm not 100% sure he's going to be, you know, a really good price. I think he could get bet down a little bit from 12-1, but I am expecting him to get a favorable trip on the front end. And, you know, he's just a horse to me that really impressed me in that Tampa Bay Derby. I was willing to label him like a one-turn type off of that Smarty Jones effort. But he came back and really ran, you know, pretty good that day to be third, be a clear third. And he adds blinkers, and he shows a half-mile bullet work in preparation. I don't think you could dismiss Moonlight Strike.
Moonlight Strike's the 8, 12-1. Blinkers go on for Safi Joseph. And, of course, one of the elements of this of playing Turfway and when people ship in like this and meet in a lot of cases, you know, some horses that have been locally prepared, including the Battaglia Exeters, you got to make some pedigree decisions. One thing that caught my eye when I was looking at some numbers, Nyquist has got gaudy synthetic stats. Mm-hmm. His horses, his sons and daughters are doing very well when they get synthetic opportunities. So that kind of caught my eye. And, you know, Hockey Dad, you mentioned the speed outside. I mean, you got three horses with Gretzky the Great and Dynamite and Hockey Dad that all are going to want to be, you know, involved and gain position early. So they're going to come marauding. Moonlight Strike puts the blinkers on and has decent speed anyway. So the whole second half of the field feels like they're going to be headlong into the turn. the pace in this is definitely going to be, at the very least, honest, and potentially even more than that. The horse that I'm curious about, and you didn't mention at all, the latest Pletcher, you know, likely race type. Here's Sainthood coming up from Fairgrounds, where he broke his maiden, and actually he ran very well in his first try at Fairgrounds.
At Gulfstream.
And yeah. You know, this was the horse. This was the horse that we talked about with Cassie, because Dolder Grand looked like he was on his way to a maiden win, and Sainthood, which was the only horse on Risen Star Day that Pletcher sent to Fairgrounds, and he ends up, you know, kind of digging in and winning. He's a Mishawish out of a Lemon Drop Kid mare, and so there's all kinds of turf aptitude in here, and he's eligible to like this surface, and I don't really know what to do with him, and he certainly has run fast enough to be competitive with this bunch.
And I'll add, you know, you might see that, like, maiden win where it's just the nose. I mean, I thought he was, like, arguably a little bit green in there. Like, it almost was, like, waiting for, you know, he basically waited until he was in deep waters, and then he came again. You know, he basically, I just didn't think he was completely focused in that race. That's a good positive sign in a sense, because he can continue to move forward. Like you said, that pedigree, you know, you would think he bred to handle the Tapeta. And I'll give you another horse as well, just, you know, at the very least to consider underneath for the vertical exotics is Hard Ride Guy. Because you talk about a troubled trip in that Battaglia. I don't think there was anywhere to go. Chris Landeros did have to slam the brakes on that day in the stretch. He's pretty much a confirmed late runner that has run really well in three straight starts at Turfway Park, and he could get the right setup. At double-digit odds, you know, Hard Ride Guy would definitely be a horse to consider underneath at the very least.
Well, and if you are expecting or anticipating that this pace does overheat, he's got the best late pace ratings going. What's he look like on Briz?
Yeah, they're solid. You know, they're in the 90s, upper 80s. Definitely one of the best. A lot of these horses don't have huge late pace numbers.
No.
So, yeah, he's arguably the top late pace performer in there. You know, I just like that, you know, there's another horse where, you know, he needed five starts to break his maiden, and you can just see the progression that he has shown since, like, you know, he got the Turfway in the winter for Ian Wilkes. Really looks like a heart-spun colt you know, he could go on and make some money with this year. It could be pretty good going forward.
Yeah. He's 10-1, and he'll be every bit of that, especially if you know, some of the other obvious connection type action, you know, flows where you think it might. All right, nice.
Yeah, it's a heck of a betting race.
It's
a race where I'm going to be looking to the spread and pick fours and pick fives. You know, like I said, Tarantino's my flight. I'm giving him the flight edge, but I'm definitely not going to take a stand in multi race bets in the Jeff Ruby. Look to narrow elsewhere on the card, Steve.
What else did you do at Turfway?
You know, in the Bourbonnet Oaks, which is a qualifier for the Kentucky Oaks, 20 points to the winner. I'll mention a couple of the contenders first. I thought Olivia of the Desert, you know, definitely had to take a good look at her. She's 3-for-3 at the mile distance, has run on well on the turf before. Number 10, Candace O, ships in for Grand Motion off of a fourth-place effort against a really good field in that Swedish chant at Gulfstream. I like that White Frost that won that race. And then Wait for Nairobi wheels back after winning the Cincinnati Trophy. That was actually, she had broken her maiden by TQ, so that two-length win was the first time she had finished first. But the filly, I'm going with Steve. I'm going with Into Vanishing, the number 7 for Jonathan Thomas. Really been, obviously, Jonathan Thomas, you know, has a stable there at Turfway this winter and has had a great meet. He's won 8 of 18 starts. He's 5th in the standings. And this Into Vanishing, no surprise, you know, that she's run pretty good considering her regal pedigree. She's by Into Mischief. But needless to say, I had the wrong damn on that one, but She's her first race at Turfway was a maiden win where she set the pace. She basically opened up in the stretch and held on to win by less than a length. I really liked her effort last time where she just crushed them on the front end, showed hot speed that day. I think she's going to come right back with Chris Landeros and run a big race on the front end in the Bourbonnet Oaks into Vanishing, Steve.
Nice. I struggled with this. I thought this race was a little tough to pin down. I will say, you know, McPeak has won this a handful of times, and I took an extra look at his Olivia the Desert, the one that kind of grabs me. I thought that that Ray Hernandez, the filly that won the Cincinnati Trophy at a nice price. I know she's got to stretch out, but she at least has gone two turns a couple of different times last year at two. And I didn't think Wait for Nairobi was impossible. Candace Owens,
no way.
Outside from motion.
And I like seeing her. I like seeing her come back and work a bullet like she did. Yeah, that was a really good race, and definitely just a mile. I mean, I don't think that's going to be too difficult. I did take a look at Cassie's fillies in there. You know, he's got that California Lily. I liked that speeding last time, but I really just think that rail post does her no favors off of that fourth place effort in the Cincinnati Trophy. But yeah, just like the Jeff Ruby, even venturing in here for Brad Cox, shipping in off of a 6.5 length maiden win at Fairgrounds. You got to respect this filly. She's by Pioneer of the Nile out of a hard spun mare, and the connections have tried three straight times to get her on the turf, and every single race has come off down there at Fairgrounds. So, I think she might be versatile enough to make a real smooth transition to the Tapeta surface for Cox. And, it's a pretty wide open race.
Agreed. I went to look because I was curious how many times McPeak had won. He's won it three times. I think once on the dirt with Orchestrator and Alex Elise, but then twice since Synthetic Wonderment in 16 and Purely a Dream in 17. So Maker, Ward, Pletcher, Catalano in recent years. Kentucky Cup 2 or not?
Yeah, I'll give you a Kentucky Cup. A set piece is the horse to beat in there. I mean, I'll definitely have him on my tickets as the favorite. But I like that return effort, Steve, by Finnick the Fierce.
Yep.
And that allowance race on March 3rd.
I agree.
So I'm giving him the edge in there. I'm just going to go too deep on my multi-race tickets. I'll probably, Finnick the Fierce's price is anywhere around that 4-1. I'll bet him to win in there. And I'll use the 2-6 for multi-race plays in the Kentucky Cup Classic.
I gave a little extra long look looking to strike as well for Cassie 12-1. Might try to work. At first I cut it in half 1, 2, 4, 6, 7, 8 and this is not an easy group either. This sequence has a potential to be. To be enormous given the field sizes here.
I'm not even sure a mile and eighth is really the best distance for set piece. So that's one thing to consider. Considering he's 8-5 on the morning line, but he might be able to handle it. It might not be an issue. In the race before that, the Latonia Stakes, I'll mention these other stakes real quick, Steve. I wound up landing on number 7, Evil Lynn, for Mike Maker. He's got a couple fillies in this race, but I just think she's going to get the right trip off of that. She ran second at the Fairgrounds in the Pago Hop, and now she came off a 6th in the Marshalls River at Gulfstream. It will be her first start on a synthetic track, but, obviously with her turf form, I think she'll make the transition and she'll get the right trip up close to the front end.
Excellent.
And then in the Rush Away, which kicks off the stakes action, this is the horse I was going to mention for the pedigree with Jonathan Thomas. I like number 7 B here. He's listed at 4-1 on the morning line. Ghost Zapper out of champion sprinter informed decision. I really liked his debut race. He won going away by a length and a half from mid-pack, close to mid-pack to win it sharply. Has come back and worked a couple bullets. I'm excited to see how this B here runs in race number 6, the Rushaway Stakes, Steve.
Excellent. Let's jump to Gulfstream and get your thoughts there.
All right, Gulfstream, you know, I like Greatest Honor in the Florida Derby. I think the mile and an eighth is going to hit him. It's going to be a perfect distance for him, and he's going to appreciate it. If I'm looking to bet the race, I might bet a couple straight exactas and take a couple price plays in here. One horse I have taken a look at is this Quantum Leap, Steve. I really thought he took, in a sense, a Quantum Leap when he stretched out to a mile and an eighth. I thought that was a good win over a nice field that day. And I just think, heck, you know, he's going to be sitting like mid-pack in this race. Could get, you know, could get a fair setup in there. The other race, the other horse I like a little bit underneath him is Pepetu. Now, granted, he has a tough outside post, but I really like that middle move he made in the Fountain of Youth, and he did come up a little bit short in the end. But he's a horse to me that has run two solid efforts over the track in the Holy Bull and the Fountain of Youth. He's going to be completely overlooked in the betting, and he's got the potential to run either second or third underneath of Greatest Honor.
Interesting. Pappy too has been, you know, I impressed both tries, Holy Bull and going even back to the Mucho Macho Man. You know, he's a nibbler and Quantum Leap, it's funny you stopped there and are intrigued. That the mile and the eighth, the move to mile and an eighth, obviously, you know, the breakthrough for him, second start as a three-year-old. Dean Wilkes, very clever, and this is a May foal, so there was potentially reason that this horse wasn't necessarily going to be precocious. And I can even tell you even more than that, May 12th birthday. Happens to be my brother's birthday. Mm-hmm. And so Chuck Simons, by the way, for those of you that want to get out in front of Chuck's birthday, May 12th for Chuck. Quantum Leap, he's within striking distance. The horses you didn't mention that are trying to make a late move here toward Derby, Soup and Sandwich, Collaborate, and Known Agenda. That race that Known Agenda ran, it's a bit of a discussion point because there's some figure makers that have that faster, and Beyer himself struggled apparently with that number. So Known Agenda may have been, you know, that may have been even better than it looked, snapping back out of the quirky race he ran in Tampa and the Sam Davis.
It'll be, you know, the one thing about Known Agenda too, tomorrow in this Florida Derby is his early positioning. I mean, I've looked at his form, and he's run better when he's been able to stay, within a fair, you know, within range of the front runners in the field. You watch that Sam F. Davis. And, you know, they went at a pretty spirited clip early, and he dropped back to 10th, 11th in the early stages, and he was just too far back to make up much of an impact. He might be eligible to sit a great trip in here because, you know, the pace, they might be going at it a little bit early, but it's definitely eligible to slow down in the internal fractions. Soup and Sandwich, I did take a good look at because John Velasquez, I do think, is an advantage. He's won the Florida Derby five times, and the next best jockey has three wins in it. And, I thought that his allowance rate to Tampa was okay. I watched it that afternoon. But, he's only run twice, so he does have, like, some potential upside to him.
Very good. All right, round out the Saturday action.
All right, in the fairgrounds, the Gulfstream Park Oaks, I just was not too keen on this field. I didn't see a lot of pace in here. I couldn't go against Cone Lima. I just thought, you know, she broke poorly in the Here Comes the Broad and still ran a good second. She gets off to a better start tomorrow. She's going to be up on the front end with Hyrat Ortiz. Looks difficult to beat in there. I thought in the Cutler Bay, obviously, you know, Annex is going to take some beating, but boy, oh boy, did he ever get the right setup in that Palm Beach. They were just flying up front that day. I thought King of Dreams, the five horse in race 11, I liked his effort. In the maiden win on turf at Gulfstream Park. Went to Tampa Bay Derby, ran fifth that day for Juan Avila. I think he's a horse that's worth a shot in here because he's going to get a good trip up close to the pace in the Cutler Bay.
The 5, 9-2, King of Dreams, and no doubt NX is the the horse to beat, but it's turf.
Yeah. So. And one other stakes horse at Gulfstream, Moon Over Miami. I thought that was a really sneaky effort in that Mackey Armada. I thought he was really, he sort of was in between horses, and he really found his best stride late, was finishing full of run that day. His first race since October for Belmont, this four-year-old colt, Malibu Moon, 5-1 on the morning line. I think he has some upside this year for Mott, and I think this is a good race for him to break through in. So I'm going to bet Moon Over Miami in race 10, Steve, the Pan American.
Somebody else I saw that was... was reaching for Moon Over Miami, 5-1 on Jane Lyons, Mott trainee, the 7 in the 10th race. Anything else, James?
I'm going with the Soft Whisper in the UAE Derby, but that's a real, like, you know, I didn't spend much time on that race, and So I did take a look at the field. I got a last second Friday play today at Turfway Park, number 3 in race 4, Steve, Dr. Foreman, 10-1 on the morning line, third off the layoff, number 3, race 4, last second Friday play.
LSFP, and any basketball for the weekend?
Oh, man, you know, Loyola, I got Loyola making the Final Four, so I'll be pulling for them this weekend. And, to me, the Oregon plays USC. I think USC is going to beat Oregon, and I think USC has the best chance to beat Gonzaga. If Gonzaga gets by that regional final, I don't think anybody's beating them in the Final Four.
James _ Scully 111. Not that he's doing much tweeting, but certainly on the Twin Spires blog roll. James, great visit, and good luck this weekend. And we'll talk ahead of next week's big Bluegrass Wood Santa Anita Derby extravaganza.
Hey, sounds good, Steve. Thank you.
We'll stay right here, and standing by is James's colleague at BrisNet and Twin Spires, Vance Hansen. Good morning.
Good morning.
The quiet assassin himself, and we bring him in to pick off some winners tomorrow morning at Dubai. And in fact, our show, you can catch the replay tomorrow, 5-8, which is perfect because the main track racing, or the main horse racing, starts at 8:15 Eastern with the Godolphin Mile. If you're into the Arabians, they open the show clunking along at the mile and a quarter distance. I hope I'm not spoiling an Arabian classic selection of yours.
No, it's hard for me to get into races where you have to kind of time it by the sundial. So taking a pass on the Arabians, there's plenty more action later in the card.
Let's dive in and kind of walk through a little bit. I focused on the dirt races myself. I haven't really looked hard at the grass and, the Alquaz I looked at, but not the two-turn events. But it starts, of course, with the Godolphin Mile. What are we doing in here, Vance?
Well, I mean, the horse to beat, the horse for the course, obviously, is Midnight Sands. He's won 5 of 6 here. Didn't show much running here in the U.S. last fall, but he was back to his old self, winning the Burj Nahar last time at Maidan. Like I said, he's only lost once over the main track, so he's a pretty solid favorite. I think a good up-and-comer potentially in this race is the horse that ran third to him last time was Twos, Calumet-bred, son of Oxbow, 4 years old. This horse sold for $7,000 as a yearling, and then he wound up in Russia, of all places, to start his career. And this wasn't like running at the Moscow Hippodrome. This wasn't top-level Russian racing. I actually had to look this track up on the map, and the track he started at was like close to the Georgia border. I mean, that's as far away from big-time racing in Russia as you can get. But, I mean, he won his first two races by 25 and 14 lengths. Then he wound up in Dubai, and he hasn't won yet in 3 starts in Dubai, but he's acquitted himself quite well, both at the stakes and handicap ranks. So, I mean, if you're looking for a horse that potentially has an up-and-coming shot to upend a field that isn't, you know, terribly deep on quality, I'd give number 14 Twos a look.
I also thought that Tuz was a player in here, and there's a few decent prices that seem competitive. Simar's other horse, Secret Ambition, the 12 is 7-1. Chiefdom caught my eye a little bit with Mikel Barzalona is 10-1. The 4, Roman Rosso, gets Ryan Moore, 12-1 for Simar. And then the two North American players in here, or two of the three, Avant Garde for Delgado with Luis Saez, and Parsimony is 30-1. Which seems a little out of whack, given the figures and given what he's done. I thought this was a really, this is why I concentrated on the dirt races, because I thought they were, really something you could grab a hold of, essentially. Then you got to deal with something like the 2 mile Gold Cup. Any thoughts in here?
Spanish Mission is an obvious contender for the win. This horse has kind of burned me a couple of times, though. Needing him to fill out an exacta a couple times last year, and he wound up throwing some really bad clunkers. So I'm a bit cool to him, just for personal reasons. But number 7, Secret Advisor, is the morning line favorite. I mean, he's very solid, 2 for 2 over this course, and was just like a nick behind Spanish Mission in their prep at Saudi Arabia last month. And Secret Advisor is consistent enough and should take some beating here. And again, this race didn't quite come up as strong as it has in previous years, in my estimation.
We go back to sort of more familiar horses when we look at the Alquaz. This is, of course, the Turf Sprint and 6 furlongs. And I, for some reason in my mind, this used to be shorter. I don't know why I thought of this as a shorter sprint, but
it was 5 furlongs before, until a few years ago, I believe.
That's what I thought. You got Space Blues for Appleby and Buick. That's the 5-2 favorite, but you got the Hills also sending Equilateral, international sprint star, gets the Tory. Brendan Walsh has got Extravagant Kid, but I thought that Graham Motion might be worth looking at here with True Velour. That's 8-1 starting the bidding. And Doug Watson had a horse, Mutafawit, that I thought was at 12-1 was a value.
Yeah, I mean, looking at the favorite, Space Blues, he's won, looks like 5 straight here. If he can handle shortening up a little bit, he does seem more like a 7 furlong type horse, and it took him a lot of energy just to get up to win the 6.5 furlong race at Riyadh last time, although that was his first start since August. But, if Space Blues handles the slight cut, turn back, and trip here, he looks like the best horse. I'd throw another couple horses out here at you. Number 3, Kadem, who won the Stewards' Cup at Goodwood a couple of years ago. Didn't finish up his 2019 season well at all, but in just 2 starts last year, ran really good fourth-place finishes in both the Diamond Jubilee and July Cup at Ascot and Newmarket, respectively. And Kadem certainly has the class to compete in this race, and he's the sentimental choice on this card for sure with the Sheikh Hamdan passing away this week. So Kadem, I'd take a look at. Another long shot I think worth looking at is Royal Crusade for Godolphin. Very limited start so far, just 6 races. He was a pretty good 2-year-old, placed twice in group company, and then ended a very abbreviated campaign last year. He wasn't quite ready for the Commonwealth Cup, but then followed up winning a Group 3 at Deauville, and he defeated Glenn Scheel in that race, and Glenn Scheel came back to flatter that form in the British Champion Sprint at Ascot. So I'm going to take his modest effort in his prep earlier this month in the Nand El Sheba Turf Sprint with a grain of salt. I'm kind of chalking it up to the fact that he just wasn't quite ready to fire his best shot off the bench, just like last year at Ascot. So I could see a Royal Crusade running a better effort here, but Space Blues, as I said before, looks like the horse to beat here.
8 with the 3-7 for Vance Hansen. We turn to the UAE Derby, and as it happens, another sentimental potential, and for New York breeding purposes, certainly Panadol has got support for Shadwell and Sheikh Hamdan. And for me, I thought there were some outsiders that really offered some value. The Uruguayan, El Patriota, 15-1. That's the one horse. And then go outside. I don't know what's wrong with Pink Kamehameha, 8-1. And New Treasure from Gosden, 20-1. So, you know, beyond Panadol, I thought the 1, 7, and 9 had some intrigue.
Yeah, if you're playing in the multi-race wagers like the pick three or the pick six, this definitely looked like a spread race to me. I mean, I had to analyze it a little bit for a feature the other day, and this looks like a blanket race to cover, to be honest with you. I mean, you could probably find three or four horses to toss with somewhat reasonable confidence, but it's difficult. Your observation on Panadol is spot on. He looks like a pretty good three-year-old over there. If pressed to make a top selection here, I do like Muhib, who's done very little wrong in three starts so far, winning 2 out of 3, including the UAE 2000 Guineas. It looks like he has the pedigree to stretch out here, and I like the fact that his connections stayed in Dubai rather than pursue the Saudi Derby last month. He'll be coming into this rather fresh, and as this is his main spring goal. So Muhib would be my top selection here. And we do have a couple of very good fillies in here, Soft Whisper and Nasek, I think is how you might pronounce it. Fillies have only won this race once, and that was about a decade ago, and I don't know the actual statistics of how fillies have done here, but it obviously would take a very good filly to beat the males here, and I'm leaning against that proposition here.
And six, then, Mahib, 6 with the 13 and 14, and respect the 8. The Golden Shaheen, and this dirt sprint, of course, has been, you know, a very popular spot for American contention and American success. And you know, think about what 1, 2, 3, 4. Then a few internationals. 5, Kinsale King, one of the great scenes in World Cup night history. Carl O'Callaghan going crazy. Benny the Bull, of course. Kelly's Landing for Eddie Keneally. And, oh, my gosh, you know, there's been George Weaver, Saratoga County. I mean, this has been, you know, 2 wins for Caller 1 going back. And Big Jag, really a race that, you know, North American sprinters have fared well, and got a kind of a interesting mix of North American invaders here. The fact that Yaupin is making it the, you know, the seasonal debut is intriguing. And, you know, last seen in the Breeders' Cup Sprint, of course, ending what had been a 4-race win streak to start the career. If Yaupin fires, and he's been working bullets, not a typical Asmussen style, if Yaupin breaks and you got Rosario here to help you, boy, he feels like the horse to chase.
You're exactly right. In the event he doesn't break well, or he gets a lot of pressure early, I really do think Doug O'Neill's Wild Man Jack is definitely worth looking at. I mean, that was a huge breakout performance in the Palos Verdes last time. This horse had primarily been running on the grass throughout his career, and had run 4th in the Bing Crosby last year in his only previous dirt start. But that was a very quality win at Santa Anita last time. And, you know, one advantage this horse has over Yaupin, not only, you know, pace-wise, I mean, Yaupin could get a lot of pressure here, and Wild Man Jack can sit back a little bit and pounce on him. But Wild Man Jack has already taken this trip to Maidan before. Last year he came over and won a group stakes on the grass. So I think that could work to his advantage here. couple of locals I'd take a look at also. Number two, Canvas, has won a couple of preps over there and has really hit his best stride locally. And another one I marked down, Matera Sky, the eighth, horse from Japan, who ran second in this race a couple of years ago to XY Jet. Obviously, he ran a very good race in Riyadh last month and certainly knows how to navigate this track.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned Matera Sky, because I wanted to ask you about Red Lazelle, the Lord Kinaloa five-year-old that gets Ryan Moore, 15-1, and it has been there, or comes here from Tokyo, ran in the February behind Cafe Faro, and turns back to six furlongs, and he's been successful sprinting. I thought that Red Lazelle on the turn back was a little intriguing, and Ryan Moore doesn't hurt.
Not at all, and as I mentioned before, the pace could get so hot that horses like him could really be finishing strong at the end. So yeah, he's if you're going deep in your exotics or even trying to find a much longer shot to win, he's definitely worth a look.
Well, Yopin is the 13 at 5-1. Wild Man Jack is the 12, 10-1 with Fernando Jara. Matera Sky, the 8. And Red Lazelle, the 10, 15-1. I also enjoy the presence of Switzerland here, the former Asmussen trainee that has been in the Mideast now the last, I think, 2-3 years. Let's press into the two turf events, the Dubai Turf, which goes a mile and an eighth, and the Shima Classic leading up to the World Cup, the 7th and 8th, and this is all you, because I have not looked at these closely.
Well, the Dubai Turf, it appears, didn't come up too deep of a race, and so it looks like a pretty good rebound spot for Lord North, who ran fourth in the Breeders' Cup Turf in a very rare mile-and-a-half venture. This horse is much better mile-and-an-eighth, mile-and-a-quarter type. Winning the Prince of Wales is at Royal Ascot last year for John Gosden. He's the class of the field, and if he, you know, is ready to run, I mean, he should win this race. Lord Glitters, another European mainstay, has done rather well here at Maidan, 2 wins, 2/3, and 4 starts. Won 2 of his 3 preps there that winter. He's an obvious backup selection. If either of those two don't show up, number 1, Al Suhail for Godolphin. This is kind of another up-and-coming 4-year-old. Had a pretty good year as a 2-year-old. Had a very abbreviated campaign last year. Wasn't ready at all to run up to par in the 2,000 guineas against a very tough field, but then won a listed stake at Sandown by 6 lengths later in the summer. And then in his reappearance in the Jebel Hatta on March 6th, he had the lead briefly in the stretch. And then it looked like he was kind of bearing out a little bit at the end and kind of gave up both first and second while losing narrowly. Could have been fatigue setting in. In the final stages of that race, it was his first back since July 9th. But Al Suhail, I think, has some upside to him in this race. But again, Lord North is certainly the horse to beat.
10 with a little 1-9 in the 7th, the Dubai Turf. That gets us to the Shima Classic. And here's Channel Maker coming off of what was a middling effort, certainly. In Saudi, Mogul, last seen winning the Vaz at Sha Tin, the wonderful O'Brien Galileo for Coolmore, and outside, here's Mishriff, who was pretty darn good winning that race in Riyadh, and Mishriff returns to the grass for Gosden and Egan in this spot.
Yeah, this is a fascinating race. Mishriff, that was seemingly a very hard race to overtake Charlatan in the stretch of the Saudi Cup. I wonder if, you know, he might be feeling the effects of this in this race. And he's also not a really confirmed mile-and-a-half type. I echo what Kelly Riley wrote in her preview of this race. We kind of wonder if Gosden is using this race kind of as a test case to see whether what kind of races Mishriff should be pointing to in Europe later this year, whether he has the stamina to go a mile and a half or will primarily stick with mile and a quarter races. The horse I've kind of keyed on is Chronogenesis. I'm not a close follower of the race of the Japanese racing scene. There's just so many hours in the day, but it's evident that no filly could have. This filly had as good a campaign in Japan last year as you could possibly have and not win championship honors over there, and it was all due to her main competition being Almond Eye, a multiple Group 1 winner over there, and very impressively won the Arima Kanen last time, and then only finished three quarters of a length back of Almond Eye in the Tenno Show Autumn, two starts back. This is a very top-class filly from Japan, and she might just have too much class to be denied in the Shima Classic. A couple others that you mentioned, Channel Maker, adequate effort in Saudi Arabia last time, although being beaten by True Self, I don't think is a big class marker coming into this race. Mogul, another top-flight Coolmore horse. He was a bit inconsistent at times last year, and I think this is probably more of a get-fit trip for some other springtime goals in Europe. I think he's probably going to need this race.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought the mare into it. Yeah, and that's I when I write things up later, I dive more into the turf races. Nice, thank you, Chronogenesis, the 9, and we turn to the World Cup. Vance Hansen with us from Twin Spires, Brisnet, and in fact, you mentioned Kelly. We wish Kelly best wishes. She had little health issue to deal with this week, so you can read her write up. And Vance, you've got your analysis as well?
I think it's going to be all audio this week, so hopefully people are taking notes as they're listening.
Very good. That's fine. Let's turn to the World Cup, and this race took a dramatic turn when Mystic Guide just exploded in the Razorback and gave Godolphin the opportunity to, ship him in. And clearly, Mystic Guide, with that performance, on the paper, becomes, the obvious favorite. And it seems way the horse to beat. I think you're going to have to do some backflips trying to find a reason to go against him.
A lot of the American horses that have won this race recently have been more of the finished article, like Arrowgate, California Chrome, Animal Kingdom. I don't think Mystic Guide is there quite there yet, but he's very close. And as you alluded to, his Razorback victory was tremendous. I guess the only two holes I could puncture in him, one, did the slot move him up several lengths last time? We'll find out. Also, looks like this will be his first race running without Lasix. I know it's going to be very warm there tomorrow night. Not necessarily humid, but warm. But we'll see how not running on Lasix affects him. But bottom line, on paper, you're exactly right. Mystic Guide is the horse to beat. And this field didn't come up terribly strong, top to bottom. One horse, one longer shot, that kind of intrigues me a little bit is the 8 Magni Cour from the barn of Andre Faber, who we all know can spring an upset in a first-time horse on the dirt. This horse has a tremendous dirt pedigree by Medaglia d'Oro out of an AP Indy mare, though he's closely related to Royal Delta. This horse hasn't really run at this level before, but if you look at his two races last summer, in his first start of the year in a listed stake at Chantilly, he defeated Persian King, who won the French 2000 Guineas the year before, and then last year won the Prix de Milan and another Group 1 in France and then finished third, beating two lengths on the arc. And then his next race, he won again in a photo finish over a multiple group, group winner over in Europe. So Magny Cours, despite his limited exposure in group races, has really demonstrated that he does have some class. 5 wins, 8 starts, 2 seconds. I would, you know, if he's 10, 12 to 1, I could certainly take a little bit of a bite in the wind pool with that horse.
Well, and that that might be the type that, you know, if there's going to be, if there's going to be, you know, an outsider or an upset. One thing that I got to mention is the presence in the pedigree. How about the wonderful Bobby Barbera mare, Indy 500, for those that remember. I love it, the AP Indy mare. And here's her six-year-old son. Unbelievable. And the other one, the other potential that we got to mention is Jesus' team, because, or Jesus' team, all he does is outperform expectation. And you know, he obviously came off Lasix in Pegasus, so Jesus' team. And Rosario gets aboard for the first time, so he's 6 to 1, and he may be every bit of that, and we'll see how the betting goes in here. But I'm so impressed with what Jose D'Angelo has done with this horse. It's a wonderful story.
It is, and he's a bit of an iron horse too. He's already had 14 yep. starts, certainly in his 4-year-old career. I mean, he had 10 starts last year, and he's just been hitting his best stride in the last few months. And that was a quality second to Nick's Go last time. So. Yeah, normally it would probably take a slightly higher quality American to win this race, but I wouldn't put it past him for running a really good race here.
Vance Hansen, everybody, and when the international action rolls around, always great to check in with Vance, and you'll certainly look forward to hearing from him when we get closer to Royal Ascot, where he's deadly. He's the quiet assassin. He's Vance Hansen.
Thanks, Steve. Have a great weekend.
Vance Hansen, everybody. Always, I love his delivery. He does a great job. The top of the hour has actually gone beyond us. We're going to not take any breaks today. We got too much to do. So I will say, this is At the Races, Sirius XM.